Hello, I'm Kerry Lonergan. Welcome to the Weekly Grill. It's brought to you by Beef Central and Elanco Animal Health. And again today, I'm joined by two of the country's very best red meat market analysts from Stocco in South Australia. Welcome to Chris Howie. Hello, Chris.
How are you, Kerry?
Chris, you've just remembered 1,000 black steers in a faraway paddock that you put there ages ago. How do you feel?
When I put them out, I thought to myself, have I pulled the right rein? Because there was no guarantees that the market would go to where it was, but the market's blown through what you hoped for. And those $1,600 steers are now coming back in at sort of $2,200 to $2,600. It's a good day.
Yep. And of course, the Ecke's gone boom. It's over 1,000 cents from Thomas Elder Markets and still smarting how the market has smashed his prediction charts about the Ecke. Welcome, Matty Dalgleish. Matty?
Thanks for having me on again, Kerry. It's always good to come and lick your wounds and admit you got it wrong.
Listen, I'm a believer in charts, but mostly it's, of course, but most of the real seem to get out the window at present and with prices in recent weeks, and your Ecke chart was left in the dust. Please explain.
Yeah, that's right. It's the top. It went through the top of the trend channel, which is a fairly uncommon scenario with charters. But it does happen. The lines are reinforced in concrete. It can get across, and it certainly has. But look, I think one of the things was the rally in the heavy steer price as well. That took me by surprise. And with heavy steer, I think now they're sitting at 430 cents a kilo live weight or thereabouts on the national indicator. That's just, giving a lot of confidence to restockers that they're going to be able to turn off at fairly good prices.
Yeah, it's extraordinary those numbers of heavy steers joining the market at present. I've heard the current price regime described as a perfect storm. Feeder steer prices at record highs and slaughter steers must be catching up fast. And anything else is also white hot. Matty, first, the South, what's going on down in Victoria?
It's not as obviously hot as what we're seeing in the northern markets. Most of this younger cattle move has been driven still by Queensland and northern New South Wales, I think. The southern markets are kind of trailing behind. If you look at the differential in price, even just across the Ecke, they're 100, 150 cents below what they're seeing in the northern markets, still in some markets here.
Chris, the sheep markets? Sheep meat markets?
Sheep markets have just taken off. So we've seen the first... plus $9. So $9.20 come out last night into supermarket orders, 18 to 26 kilo. People I've been speaking to the last 2 days, we think we're going to see a severe shortage of heavy lamb over the next, we've got about 3 weeks left, and then there'll be a hole, and there'll be quite a number of light store and trade lambs coming on. So there's just going to be that gap of supply. Where the market goes from here, we're already seeing that sort of $9 plus in the sale yards. I think we'll just see that incremental increase until sort of early September, to tell you the truth.
Are you getting buyers from the north creeping into across the south looking for cattle or sheep meat?
What I was told yesterday is that every buyer, both cattle and sheep, are operating pretty much at every sale yard. Buyers that drift in and out, depending on supply, they're just operating wherever they can to find numbers.
Matty, the average feeder steer price is now around, I've just done some sums in my head this morning, $430 dearer than 12 months ago.
Yeah, it's incredible. I think, in that feeder space, we might have mentioned it last time, Kerry, in the podcast, that there's still probably margin in that longer held trade. And I think that's where the market's heading towards in the feeder space, is holding for a bit longer. Certainly in the shorter length trades, I think there's not a lot of money left in it.
What influence do you think, it's a question for both of you, what influence do you think weather is having? Speaking broadly, it's been a very wet winter, most unusually wet in places over many areas. And subsequently, some are reporting that the poorer feeding performance when the cattle are just not eating as well as they might in the normal season. Is that widespread?
It's cold weather in feedlot situations will always see your weight gains back off. They're keeping more to keep warm. Seasonally, everyone I've spoken to in the last week said that we're actually only one good rain away from quite a bit of flood starting to appear. All of the water catchments, the New England, all the creeks are running, and they're running at high levels. We come down into Tumut. All of the creeks there are running and the catchments are pretty much full and the ground is waterlogged. So if we do get some form of rain event, which is unusual sort of midwinter, we could get a little bit of limited access to get livestock out.
Is that a problem in Victoria too, Madison?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's pretty wet underfoot. It's probably the wettest, you know, I've seen it in the Western districts, at least in the last decade. And the other thing too is the most recent Bureau of Meteorology forecast is that we're looking like we're going to have a reasonably wet entry into spring. So, you know, there's a fair chance that we will probably end up with too much water. I guess come the heat of summer, though, with enough in the reserve, it's going to be really good pasture again this season across the southern states.
Kerry, Western Australia, it's unusual that we see the east and the west firing at the same time. The west has got a lot of water. Pretty much the wheat belt into the Great Southern is very wet. The lakes, the big salt lakes, are actually filling up midwinter, and normally they only fill on summer rains.
Yes, and they need rain just about every week for the rest of the year, don't they? The grain growers, at least. Now, it seems to me, boys, a lot of the beef industry are getting used to paying and receiving high prices relative to, say, 18 months or 2 years back. Does that spell trouble when you accept these record high prices?
I think, yes, certainly. I just did some recent analysis, Kerry, on Thomas Elder Markets, looking at the difference, the spread between the 90CL and the Eastern Young Cattle Indicator. And that's one that generally price-wise they tend to run together unless there's times like severe drought or decent restocking like we're seeing now where that's when it can move. And this year we're seeing the spread widen to the wide it's ever been in terms of a premium. So the Ecke above the 90CL, nearly 200 cents above the average for this year, which if you contrast that to 2016, that spread was at about 50 cents over the year, 57 cents in fact. So we're at massive levels above, even with the export markets going, firing again and those export markets rising, we're still seeing prices here that are going beyond that as well. So I think over the long term, and certainly we're seeing this with the processing sector, it's been good that they've been able to get some more for their export, kind of consignments, but still the domestic market is kind of going quicker than what they're getting. So I can't see how this can persist long-term, particularly for processors, these prices. It's just at levels now that I think are quite unsustainable for the long-term.
Chris, is there a seminal moment or incident that will wake up the buyers and the sellers about the prices that they're not going to last forever?
The one thing that will change it, Australia, is heat. Matt mentioned it before. When we hit summer and the feed stops growing is normally when you see a reset of market. We're far enough into the winter now. Supply is the issue. We saw cows making $3.90 at Barnawatha this week. That's a cow cast for age and she's bringing back over $3,000.
$3,000 for a cow.
God. 3,000, those Angus cows, they weighed 760 kilo. But it's huge money. And the demand for mutton and cow, the 90CL, normally you'll see a little bit of a lag. And Matt would see that in the charts. The Ecke takes off on the back of the rain. And now we're starting to see supply drive the prices on those 90CL and mutton.
It seems that people are going to the markets and just accepting that they're going to pay these extraordinary sums, and that's what disturbs me in the sense that there doesn't seem to be any end to this. We're always looking at the Ecke saying it can't go any further, and sure enough it does.
The Ecke is driven by the fact that it's reporting on cattle that you can grow into weight, and a lot of the feedlots I've been speaking to, I'm not saying they're comfortable at the prices, but they have got in place orders that there's no one just going to spot market at these prices, I don't believe. It would be a big call if you were. They've all got orders. They've probably got defined margin coming out of feedlot, so they're comfortable that they're still making some form of margin.
Yeah, let's discuss briefly the Ecke and what it is. It's for young cattle, of course, we all know that, but is it taken notice of by most producers around the country, or do they just use that as a marker for what they're particularly selling or wanting to buy, et cetera?
I don't think it, I mean, yeah, it's, and it's looking at those 200 to 400 kilo live weight animals, but I don't think necessarily that it's looked at, you know, when people are looking at their own budgets and that, you know, internally, that it doesn't fit. It's not a, you know, fit for purpose. And certainly if you look at it across the states too, the Ecky in Queensland is a different number than the Ecky in Victoria. So it's not that fit for purpose for the individual, but I like to look at it, Kerry, like the All Ords. You know, it's a good kind of sentiment indicator for the broader cattle market. You know, but you know, it's not going to help you if you're trying to pick a particular stock.
And it's a good indicator too, I guess, for bankers and financiers at the big end of town. The financiers and the bankers can look at that and say, look how well this industry is going, and we're financing up this, that, and the other. That's what I view the Ecky as at present, especially at these record levels.
The year-on-year comparisons are what I would look at. Quite often it'll follow the same trend, and you can see defined moments, whether it be a rain event or whether it be an international trade agreement, or year-on-year, and you overlap the last 5 years, it actually gives you a really good understanding of what's coming next, irrespective of what the price is.
Yeah. Is that a fair enough comment, Matt, that it's a more of an indicator for the big end of town to look at and say, look at this?
Oh yeah, for sure. As an analyst perspective, you know, to have something like this as a benchmark thing, you can kind of reference other things against. It's ideal.
Let's go back to you mentioned briefly exports. Tell us, Matt, about the pluses and the minuses, especially towards Asia at present.
Look, I think we're still seeing reasonably robust penetration into South Korea. Has been a big shining light for Australia this season. We saw some of it last year where they managed the COVID epidemic quite well, and we were seeing average to above average flows last season when our other markets were kind of tanking. This year, Japan is kind of, you know, lower than expected, you know, below normal ranges just marginally. But then they're also struggling through COVID still now in terms of, you know, not quite getting a hold of it, obviously, you know, causing grief for the Olympic Games as well, but it's obviously not helping their kind of food service sector either. But the big concern from our export markets really is the, you know, very, very low demand into the US. That's kind of, you know, sitting around 45% below the 5-year trend. So that's, you know, uncharacteristically low. And then obviously the issues in China, their trade issues in China are still ongoing. So that's kind of keeping them a bit subdued as well. You know, so on balance, I think, you know, it's probably more negative than positive at the moment, but we've also, you know, we are struggling with the supply to send to all of, if they're all firing, we probably wouldn't be able to supply them all. So it's possibly, you know, that's the only silver lining on the cloud that you know, we're going through this kind of weaker demand phase at a time when we don't really have the product anyway.
Time for a break from our discussion on the markets with Chris Howie and Matty Dalglish. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Accutac Duo Star from Elanco provides knockdown and residual control of cattle ticks and ivermectin-sensitive parasites. Applied early in the season, Accutac Duo Star reduces the buildup of the tick population and helps to prolong the life of effective chemistry. Give ticks and worms the flick with Accutac Duo Star. Always read and follow the label directions and ensure good agricultural practice for optimal parasite control.
Welcome back. More on the markets now from Matty Dalglish and Chris Howie. I've heard that the COVID in Indonesia is maybe 8 or 10 times worse than officially disclosed. But a bright spot must be the opening up of food services, to a point at least, recovering in Europe and in the US.
We've seen it certainly for the lamb market, lamb and mutton market. The US have been very strong, but you know, I think the food service sector is very, you know, it's very in tune with what's happening there. And the lamb product from Australia, about 60% of what we send to the US goes into their food service sector, and 60% adding into the fine dining and restaurants. So the fact that they're back, and you know, what their rollout for their vaccine in North America or you know, Canada is looking very good, and also the US is up near 70%. So that's allowing them to get out and you know, and go and spend time in restaurants, and that's certainly helping you know, the kind of mutton and lamb trade into there. Unfortunately, it hasn't really kind of translated to the beef side. And maybe that's a price point issue. You know, we are very expensive.
Yeah, tell us about the prices, Chris, going into America, the lamb meat, or lamb especially, which has been lifting over recent years. What are the prices doing recently?
Look, I'll leave that to Matt in regards to the international pricing. But what we're seeing domestically, look, lamb milk, Coca-Cola and bread are what drag customers into supermarkets. And quite often they're offset against the pricing on other commodities. But I think over the next couple of weeks, we will see the lamb prices probably lift a bit in supermarket. However, we're also right on the cusp of the spring lamb campaign. So the new season lamb is always a big campaign for retailers. What we have seen, though, is the sophistication of the processes with the product that they are exporting. The old six-way cut lamb is a thing of the past. The technology now in regards to the French racks using water to bone clean, there are so many different types of cut now going into that hospitality trade that they are actually finding themselves a premium within market.
Is there any penetration in Asia or much at all?
For the Chinese market, actually, lamb's been really strong in the last few months, and it's been pretty good most of the season in terms of above the average. But the last 2 months have been particularly strong. For mutton, it's pretty much on trend, or it's slightly below trend by about 2-3%. So given the tight supplies and the high price relative to lamb of mutton, I think the fact that China is sitting on the average is probably still a pretty good sign. You know, everything in balance. I think that's a very good positive for the broader sheep industry.
Look, let's have a look at retail prices in Australia. All these record prices in the sale yards, et cetera, and on direct to market, et cetera, direct to works. What sort of impact are they having on the retail prices? I know the big chains like to keep their prices steady for as long as possible, but surely they can't continue to wear these increases, and the big lifts in prices at a retail level must be here or on the way at least.
There is a bit of a lag there when you do look at those retail prices. Obviously, the ABS only report on them quarterly. And so part of that, the lag is the delayed reporting, but also there is a bit of just, you know, supply chain lag. I think there could be some prices still yet to come in terms of rises in the retail space, particularly for beef. When you look at it, some of the big retailers tend to use lamb as a bit of a discounted product and maybe take a bit less margin at the retail level to try and attract the consumer into the back of the store. They don't tend to do the same with beef. If you look, I just saw a chart recently, actually, that was put out last week on deflated retail prices. And for beef, we're nearing a deflated top. Lamb's already at a top in terms of deflated prices. And then obviously you've got pig meat and chicken are down near all-time lows. So, you know, very, very good efficiencies in those markets and managing to keep well ahead of inflation.
Chris, that you agree with that, I would think?
Yeah, I do. I think the one piece in the lamb market that we don't factor is the skin value. So this time last year, we were struggling to get $2 a skin. And what we're seeing now is crossbred skins, we're getting sort of 8 to 10, and merino skins, we're getting 20. So all of a sudden, you're getting between 10 and 15% of the value of the carcass is attributed to skin. So that is providing a value for the producer, but it's also something that can be taken off the carcass value by the retailer.
Wow, that's remarkable. I wasn't aware of that. It had lifted so much. I know cattle hides have jumped in recent months and they were down to almost zero. They'll be used as landfill. Mm. But they're both recovering, both lamb hides and cow hides, lamb skin
hides. Anything with a better quality wool, you know, a merino base is definitely outselling the normal crossbred type skin.
Well, it can only be good news. Now, look, a very interesting loan was revealed last week. The Stockyard Group has a loan from the Commonwealth Bank. And from what I read, the interest rate of that loan will depend on the company's performance in environmental matters and animal welfare and workplace health and safety. Is this concerning? Is this sort of loan, is it the way of the future, or is that a one-off, do you think?
That's a good question. It does concern me, this kind of, I understand that there's got to be a look at a triple bottom line and making sure that corporations are doing the right thing across, various measures, not just a profitability spectrum. But when we start to bring in the morality around lending practices and who you're lending to, I think there was, just recently there's been some discussion around one of the big banks, an up and coming bank that's kind of refusing to lend to certain parts of the red meat sector and the livestock transport sector. And they're currently having an ACCC, I think, investigation as to whether that's appropriate conduct. I think it's a bit of an overstretch when you start to have these moral decisions based around what should be a financial transaction.
Chris, have you heard of this happening in your area?
Yeah, so it's been around for a little while. What it comes down to is social license driven at a board level. And quite often it's not understanding the livestock industry. So you make an emotional decision and then push it through, as we're seeing now. Although it's a surprising amount of international orders are now asking the question, is there any carbon offset related to the supply? And Wagyu is the one that's dropped into the equation in the last couple of weeks. Is there any carbon offset incorporated into the supply of that product?
It's a great story, carbon credits. So it's one we've got upcoming on the grill as well. So in closing, are you happy to give us an ecky for, say, mid-September? Matthew, you're first.
This move's kind of blown me out of the water somewhat. I just can't see it continuing to surge higher, but I did run some numbers on looking at the lighter end of the ecky if you were buying lighter cattle and how much could you pay for the lighter stuff, and that kind of spat out a figure of about 1070, which came me, I was goggle-eyed at that. I thought, gosh, surely we can't.
1070.
Wow. Yeah, surely we can't see it as high as that. But now that we're in this uncharted territory from a chart perspective, I mean, there isn't really any chart point that I can pull out and say that's a fair and reasonable level. So if I go back to the economics, I think, once it gets past that, and that's assuming you can turn that animal off for above $4, say, beyond 1070, 1080, it starts to become, really, really super risky trading. So I guess that's my next level. But I still think that at any stage we could start to see it head south. It's just a matter of when.
It's a long way of saying what number.
Correct.
So you're going to give me a number?
Oh, as where it will be in... Oh, sorry,
mid-September?
I was telling you the top, wasn't I? The potential top. Look, I think mid-September, I think we're going to be back under 10. Let's say 980.
980. Chris, you've heard all that stuff from Matt, all the theoretical stuff. What's your opinion?
Anyone that's got numbers, start lock pricing. And I mean that, start looking for a locked in price for the end of August, mid-September. It'll be at a discount to what the current market is, but take the money, lock it in. Whether you lock in 40 or 50% of your turn off and play the market with the rest, I don't care. But it would be foolish not to be looking at taking forward price. I think when we do see supply, and I don't think we'll see it probably until early October, but the ecky will run off extremely quickly then. And I'd say it'll head back towards $9.
Great to have you on board again, boys. Thank you very much. Matty Dogleish from Thomas Elder Markets and Chris Harrod from Stocco. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Cheers, Kerry.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining me today. Until next time. I'm Kerry Lonigan, and this is The Weekly Grill, brought to you by Beef Central and our podcast partner, Elanco Animal Health.